Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From Hayward to Dublin to Pacifica, this is KGMC-FM and HD1 San Francisco, 95.7 The Game. Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is 95.7 The Game.
Good Saturday morning to you. It is cooling down a little bit in the Bay Area, certainly here in downtown San Francisco. Temperatures in the 70s, which is different from the 90s. And we've got you covered here on 95.7 The Game for the next 4 hours. It's John Dickinson and the lovely and talented.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Whitey Gleason.
Thank you, JD. Yeah.
Whitey, together again.
Yes. Wonderful. I've been on the air, had the pleasure of being on the air here yesterday with with Mr. Kolsky, I had never met before. Had a great time. Appreciate that they had me in. But so it's nice to be here with someone that I've known for such a long time. And speaking of the weather, last night, boy, the park was live out there at Oracle, huh? Your Giants, a slugfest with the Marlins in that warm weather.
Yeah, baseball scores are out of control everywhere except at Oracle Park.
Yeah.
You got 14-9 in Arlington. You got 21-7 earlier in the week. Just teams putting up runs left and right.
Yeah.
Oracle Park on a 88-degree evening at 7:15.
One nothing. Flying, yeah. One nice win for the Orange and Black.
1-0.
Yeah.
1-0. Giants, they're getting closer to getting Bruce Bochy win number 2,000 for his career.
Three short now, right?
Yeah, so can't get it done this weekend, and then they go to Boston, Atlanta. But it looks like, and look, they needed to get 74 at the start of the year to get him to 2,000. I thought, I don't know. It's going to be a little shaky. And it looked like there was almost no chance they were going to get to 74 until they got hot in July. And July actually put them in the conversation for a few more things than that for a little while. But it put Bochy right there on track to get that 2,000th win.
And they had it looked like on TV. It looks like they had a decent crowd last night. I don't know what the numbers were. They had more people there than I thought they'd have for the Marlins. And then Sunday is Brandon Crawford Boba Fett bobblehead day, so that, you know, they're going to pack him in for that game. So I thought that they might have some issues drawing with the fish in town.
Yeah, and the weekend, though, I think the weekend helps.
Yeah.
But, boy, the crowds this week against Pittsburgh during the week, eesh.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime it's 26,000 is your base,
yeah,
and your announced attendance is 26 and some change.
Announced, yeah.
That tells you that nobody woke up that morning and thought, hey, I want to go to the game.
Who's pitching? Tyler Beattie? Let's go. Let's get tickets.
Hey, I want to see a ball game.
Yeah. So, Boch on his way to 2,000. How about the 49ers, JD? Are they on their way to a 2-0 start?
2-0? How about 4-0?
Ooh, what?
How about 4-0, Whitey?
What did Ryan put in your coffee?
The 49ers are in... They are in as good a position as they possibly could be in this sense. And look, 49er fan fervor... It didn't take long. I think there was some cautious optimism compared to last year. Last year, it was just unabashed. This team can make the playoffs.
Because of the way they had finished the previous season.
Exactly. And Jimmy Garoppolo coming back, and then he didn't look all that great in the three games leading up to his ACL injury. The entire year last year just completely wiped away, right? So I think there's cautious optimism coming into this year. Can he stay healthy? He didn't look all that great. Can he get his swag back and start, you know, throwing it all over the field and looking like a guy that is a leader of a team that could win 10, 11 games.
The next great 49er quarterback.
Exactly, that whole thing. But I think it was cautious optimism because he had to prove it. The onus was on him and them as a team to prove it. Boy, you get game number one, though, and all of a sudden you start looking at the schedule. Because we all play the schedule game, right? We all analyze all 256 games. Whitey,
right.
All for 7 months in the offseason. Mm-hmm. You just look at every from the day the schedule comes out, win, loss, win, loss, it changed. You look at the 49ers now, and it's an if, and it's a big if, because all of a sudden Cincinnati looks like a tougher game than maybe we would have thought. But Pittsburgh looks like maybe it's an easier game. Cleveland looks like maybe it's an easier game.
You're right, 4-0, baby.
Panthers are 0-2. If you can get tomorrow, this team could be 4-0.
You're right. Anything less than 4-0, you got to get rid of your quarterback and fire your coach.
Boy, how surprising was it this week? And I do think there's pressure on Kyle Shanahan to win games. But how surprising was it this week? Look, the 49ers, big win at Tampa. And this is a game I sort of flipped on. I thought throughout the course of the offseason, that's going to be a tough game. Bruce Arians, he's going to fix up Jameis Winston. It's going to be really hot in Florida.
And you were there, right?
And it was sticky, although it didn't. It seemed like the players did have some issues with it. And Richard Sherman said it was one of the toughest games as far as elements he's ever played in. There were some cramping issues and different things going on there. But you get that game. And that was a game I thought was going to be difficult. But as you led toward it, you thought, well, you know, the defense looked pretty good. I thought the defense in training camp better than expected. The offense, shaky. And the big question coming into the year is, can they actually pick off some passes and force some turnovers? The 49ers did all of that,
right,
to the tune of their defense scoring more than they allowed. And you're able to get a win when the quarterback doesn't play well. But I was stunned, Whitey, to hear the comments from Mike Silver coming out of that game that the 49ers may make him. We'll play the audio coming up here. They may make a quarterback switch quicker than people think if they are struggling. I got to give Jimmy Garoppolo a little room to breathe, right?
Yeah, two things. You mentioned the defense, and what an ideal matchup that was last week for the defense. 49ers with the rebuilt front facing a porous Tampa Bay offensive line. That was a great matchup in their favor. And also, obviously, the secondary with two interceptions last year, and they're facing Jameis Winston. So that was a great matchup, and defensively, for the most part, as you said, they took advantage of that. The problem with Jimmy Garoppolo last week, I think you have to really take a close look at the passes that he missed. Not so much, the pick six was dreadful, but in this offense, you know, if you look at the analytics, any drive is much more likely in football to result in a touchdown if it includes at least one play of 20 yards or more. Kyle Shanahan's offense is set up so that you're going to get your shots. Jimmy Garoppolo, whoever the quarterback is, doesn't have to throw for 350 yards. But when the throw is open downfield, he's got to hit it. Otherwise, the whole offense falls apart. With play action running, you're setting up those big plays downfield, and he missed them. And if he can't make those throws, I think it's fair to wonder whether he's the right quarterback for this system. Now, we don't know yet, but it is interesting how many people seem to be looking at it as, that is an issue going forward. Is he the right guy? Well, he's coming off an injury. It's only one game, and they won. But I think it's fair to keep that in mind going forward here.
It's stunning to me because at the very least, I would want to think you'd want to see an entire season of Jimmy Garoppolo no matter what. You just want to see, can he work? Even if he does struggle early, even if you do lose some games, and again, maybe there's pressure on Kyle Shanahan to win games so he wouldn't afford him that luxury. But given what the 49ers spent on Jimmy Garoppolo, all of the unknowns coming into the year surrounding Jimmy Garoppolo, it's just too early to tell, and I would want a full 16-game picture to look at. And just the fact that he could get through and play 16 would be a box that hasn't been checked yet.
I think if you put all of our opinions aside for a moment, the really interesting thing about the Mike Silver suggestion is that Mike Silver is not somebody who just says, well, here's what I think. If he says, hey, I think they may make the switch sooner than people think, there's a good chance that's based on something that he is hearing or something else that he knows, right? It's one thing for you or I to say, oh, it's too early to make a move, or, oh, yeah, they got to get rid of Garoppolo. But if he says they make the move sooner than people think, I suspect that he has some reason to think that besides just what he thinks he would do.
Let's go ahead and hear the clip, Mike Silver, the NFL Network, regarding Jimmy Garoppolo. Again, this is coming off of a win. The 49ers get a win in Tampa, but Jimmy Garoppolo didn't play great. Here's what Mike Silver had to say.
Jimmy Garoppolo, you saw the touchdown. He also threw a pick six. You know, rough moments in the preseason. He's coming back from the knee injury. Guys, keep an eye on this. Nick Mullins is Kyle Shanahan's type of quarterback. He is almost a savant when it comes to understanding the offense. He really, really executes it in a way that Kyle Shanahan likes. If Jimmy Garoppolo struggles or continues to struggle and they're either losing or he's not playing well, or both, I don't think it's that far-fetched that they could make a quarterback switch earlier than some people might imagine.
All right, so a lot to unpack there. If they're losing or he's not playing well or both, well, at this point, it would be, well, they're winning.
Right.
He's not playing well.
In one game, he didn't play well.
Right. I think, to your point, as much as the interception was bad, and you could...
It was really bad.
And we could have a conversation about that, because I think one of the things that I just have bookmarked for him is he going to be that guy that always throws that pass every once in a while, once a game or once every other game? Is he just going to be the guy that can throw the game-wrecking interception? Because you throw that interception a lot, and you don't win the game, simply because
no
of
question.
It. Now, the 49ers made up for it because they took two back the other way themselves. So they actually won the pick-six battle.
Jameis is very generous in that regard sometimes.
So you won the pick-six. You won the awful throw battle, 14-7.
Yeah.
You won the So you escaped there. But if Garoppolo is going to throw that, and he threw pick-six against Minnesota last year, he threw the pick-six that got called back against the Lions in week two last year that literally would have lost them that game. They were inside of 4 minutes to go. It was a one-score game. He threw the ball. It was picked for a touchdown. It got called off due to a penalty, and the 49ers wound up winning that game. So he's got that in him a little bit.
We didn't see it with New England. Obviously, he didn't play a lot, but he didn't throw an interception as a Patriot. As a 49er, he's got 13 touches, 9 interceptions.
The other interesting thing from what Mike Silver had to say, Nick Mullins is Kyle Shanahan's type?
There you go.
I thought C.J. Beathard was Kyle Shanahan's type.
That's why he's on the roster, too.
A savant? Nick Mullins is a savant? In terms of, that's interesting. And is that, does that lead you, Whitey, to wonder if there's maybe a little bit of a shot at Jimmy Garoppolo's intelligence there?
I don't know about a shot at his intelligence. I have to think if that were an issue that he wouldn't have lasted in New England as long as he did. I don't think Bill Belichick would want to be, you know, nurturing Jimmy Garoppolo to be Brady's replacement down the road if he wasn't intelligent. But I do think there's a question as to how satisfied Coach Shanahan is with how quickly Jimmy G has grasped and continues to master his system.
Something to be said for the fact that as time has gone on, Jimmy Garoppolo has looked less comfortable in the offense.
Yeah. He almost looked like he had the yips last week.
That keeps coming up. The yips. Like he's just tight on throws, that's leading to the inaccurate throws?
Yeah, it's when I talk to...
What do you define that? Because I think everybody has their own definition. You know what? Let's hold on to that.
I will. I'd be happy to.
Whitey is going to define the yips, because I've heard, and it's actually a little bit mind-numbing to me, because I never know what exactly that means.
I'll give you the definition that a former NFL quarterback approved. I mentioned it to him, and he said, that's it, exactly.
That's perfect. We got that coming up. Your phone calls, 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason with you on a Saturday morning here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson and Whitey Gleason with you on a Saturday. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. We'll be joined by the great Dieter Kurtenbach, San Jose Mercury News sports columnist.
Wunderbar.
Bay Area News Group. Also, Cam Inman is going to join us. He was in Youngstown all week covering the 49ers and on to Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. 49ers literally
on to Cincinnati
looking for a 2-0 start. Whitey, do you know the last time the 49ers won two road games a season?
I do, because I actually heard Damon Bruce talking about it this week on 95.7 The Game. He said it was 1989.
Wow. 1989.
Yeah.
It's been 30 years. Now, a lot of times, you know, teams don't open up with two games on the road. But 30 years since the 49ers opened up with two road wins. That was a Super Bowl champion team.
Yeah. Was that the first year under Seifert?
Yeah, it was. It was, actually.
Can I ask you this? I think in some ways, I want to see if you agree, In some ways, the 49ers have dominated the Bengals as a franchise in a way that no other team has dominated another. In this sense, they beat them twice in the Super Bowl. 49ers beat the Bengals twice in the Super Bowl using an offense that was created in Cincinnati by Bill Walsh. Okay, he created this offense. We're going to take him. Of course, he went to Stanford first. We're going to take your coach who created this offense and then use that offense that was created in Cincinnati to beat you in the Super Bowl twice. Plus, the 49ers, I think, are 11-4 all time against Cincinnati.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That is pretty good.
If Bill Walsh had stayed in Cincinnati, and apparently Paul Brown was not a Bill Walsh fan, I mean, that
they'd have at least
changes
eight
the course
Super Bowls.
Of
they'd have at least
history.
Eight Super Bowls.
Well,
since 1981.
Yeah.
At least eight, right?
Yes, because Ken Anderson could spin it.
I like that. That's a good little nugget.
I mean, that's football history. 100th year of the league. You look at that. Wow, things could have changed dramatically had Bill Walsh ended up coaching the Bengals.
You know what this week had me thinking of? It had me thinking of 2011, and it was the first year under Jim Harbaugh, and the 49ers started that year actually with two home games, and they beat Seattle week one. And that was Pete Carroll's second year, I believe, with the Seahawks.
Didn't Ted Ginn Jr. have a big game?
Yeah.
Big return game.
And remember, that was the game where coming out of it, you know, not much was expected of the 49ers. And you had Jim Harbaugh saying, hey, I don't see a lot of highlights of these guys. Like, I see more. Didn't see a lot of highlights on the highlight shows of these guys.
Yeah.
You know, they played a pretty darn good game there. They ended up losing to Dallas week two.
Tony Romo, that was his broken rib game, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then they went to Cincinnati.
Bengals home opener. At the time, it was their smallest opening day crowd in the last 30 years.
And they stayed in Youngstown. They went to Cincinnati. They played the Bengals. They stayed in Youngstown, so it's a little backwards. And then they went to Philadelphia. And if
that
you remember,
that was the big comeback
the
over the Dream Team. Yeah.
That was the Dream Team Eagles that were supposed to go 19-0 and win the Super Bowl. And the 49ers came back from a couple of touchdowns down in that game to win that game after an ugly win at Cincinnati.
Do you remember the score of that game?
In Cincinnati? Wasn't it like 13-11 or
13-8.
Yeah.
Andy Lee ran out of the back of the end zone with 6 seconds left for safety. 13-8.
Yeah. So the 49ers ended up 3-1 coming out of that. So this just... made me think a little bit back toward the last time, and this was the last time the 49ers were a bad team for a number of years trying to become a good team. And an early trip to Cincinnati and staying in Youngstown, that was a 2-0 trip that propelled them along the way toward what wound up being a 13-3 season.
So speaking of history, you're saying history's going to repeat itself, huh?
It's funny. I flipped. The whole offseason, I thought, Tampa feels like a loss, but then they bounce back, a lot of pressure. Kyle Shanahan needs to win games. The Bengals aren't going to be that good. I think the 49ers, with the week in Youngstown, they bounce back, they win at Cincinnati. But leading up to the game last week, I thought, you know what? I think they're going to win at Tampa Bay. And then they did.
Yeah.
I just thought the defense and the pass rush would create some problems, and it did. It turned Jameis Winston into a turnover machine. But now you look at it, and we're always constantly evolving our opinions of that schedule, and now it looks like, the Bengals, that's going to be a tougher game.
I really don't know what to think of the Bengals yet. I think you and I agree in that Andy Dalton is habitually underrated.
He doesn't stink.
Right. But last week, I mean, they did lose. I know they were in that game in Seattle. As you've pointed out, Seattle has a tendency to play down
at
to
home.
Their opponent's level at home. I think the 49er defensive front has another golden opportunity this week. That said, the Bengals' rather anonymous offensive line, they played well last week. Seattle, as we said, Seattle said, you're not running the ball. But they kept Andy Dalton upright. So they played well. I think that's why Nick Bosa is playing this week. He's hurt, but he's like, I'm not going to miss the Bengals.
A lot of six-man fronts for the
Seahawks. Yes,
literally,
for the Seahawks. Yes. Yeah. So I don't know if the 49ers will... try the same strategy against the Bengals. We'll see.
Andy Dalton, somebody that in the regular season, you dare him to beat you, he might just beat you. Right?
I mean, as long as it's not a primetime game.
Yeah. And tomorrow is far from it.
Yeah. I don't know how their coach became a head coach, Zach Taylor. You look at his resume. how does that say head coach? He was an assistant with the Dolphins in the wake of the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin scandal where they fired all the coaches. He got a job there. He was a coordinator 1 year at the University of Cincinnati, and their offense was so bad the coach got fired. But then, aha, then he was Sean McVay's quarterback coach
there
for 1 year. Oh, head coach material. And so far, so good.
If you've ever attended a dinner party with Sean McVay, you can be an NFL head coach.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have not, but you never know. Still time.
Yeah. I was invited, but I said, if JD's not going, I'm not going. So. You wanted a definition of the yips?
I did.
Okay.
We're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo, and you said something that I've heard a ton of. I heard it in the preseason. It was Jimmy Garoppolo has the yips, and it kind of made me bristle a little bit because I'm thinking, how do you even define that in a preseason game? A
couple of years ago, we were talking to former 49er quarterback Trent Dilfer, who's worked with a lot of quarterbacks. We may even have been talking about Colin at the time.
Now, he would know.
Yeah, and I said, here's what I think the yips are, and Trent Dilfer said, that's exactly what it is. He said it's when you, as a quarterback or athlete or putter, whatever you are, when you are so concerned that what you're doing is going to result in something bad, that at the moment you do it, whether it's putting, throwing a baseball, we've seen it right with baseball players that can't throw the ball, or a quarterback, right at the moment you're doing it, you hurry through it to get it over with. Because you're so concerned, oh, this is going to go badly, I got to get it over with. And you obviously, fine motor skills, you can't rush through it.
Do you think the pick six was that kind of a throw?
That was just such a bad decision, though. You know, that was such a bad... It was right there in front of him.
So
that
maybe was, the yips have more led to some of the inaccurate passes.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the pick six was just...
What did you see there?
Here's
what are you
where
looking
I'm throwing
at?
It.
Yeah.
Why'd you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
me,
not really the yips, according to Trent Dilfer.
The biggest concern still for me is that type of throw. As far as Jimmy Garoppolo goes.
Because you think it may just be part of his DNA and you can't get that out.
Well, and there are some, even great quarterbacks have that in them. I mean, Brett Favre Brett Favre would make that throw.
But
that,
if you're good, they just
goes
say,
right to the other team.
Yeah, if you're good and your team wins, you're a gunslinger. If your team's bad, what is interception machine?
Tony Romo, that guy that would throw that. What are you doing? That ball's going the other way for a touchdown. What are you, even in a game where played great, that would be the big, like, that's the my worry is, even if Jimmy Garoppolo is good, that he's still gonna make that play often enough to where one or two games a season he just flips on you and you're not good enough to overcome it. It starts to become one something that could be contagious. And you know, Matt Schaub, look at a guy like Matt Schaub, right, with the Texans.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
throw a couple of those.
Who ran Shanahan's offense,
and
by
that's
the way.
When I think you start to get the yips. Like,
yeah.
that's when I think you can start to get the yips, and the pick sixes become a little bit contagious.
Jimmy Garoppolo said something really interesting after the five interceptions he threw, supposedly in practice. He said, in preseason, I take more chances, right? In practice, preseason, I take more chances. But if you look at the numbers from last year, small sample size, I know he didn't play much. But he, relative to other quarterbacks, he threw into a lot of tight windows. So he can say, I take more chances during the preseason. But last year, anyway, again, small sample size, he took a lot of chances during the regular season, which is something, to your point, that he probably needs to curb.
Yeah, it's, I mean...
Plus, in the offense, you shouldn't have to throw in a lot of tight windows if it's working in this offense.
Well, if it's working, and that, I think, is the other big takeaway from week one as it leads to week two. It's the fact that there were a lot of open throws that he missed. There were a lot of plays that were just there to be had.
Right.
To where he could have thrown for 100 yards more and five more completions, but he just, it was either a little bit behind or an overthrow or something that's off the mark just a little bit to where a receiver, could catch it, but because it wasn't a perfect throw, it winds up getting dropped.
They're going to send him to Afghanistan to overthrow the Taliban. Hello. Is this on? Sorry. Strike that.
I was looking for something.
But just think if you're Kyle Shanahan and you're setting up those plays, right? With play action and running ball, and you're setting up trying to get to the point where we got a receiver downfield, Goodwin's open downfield, and Jimmy G missed him. Well, great. Now what am I supposed to do? That's what we're setting up.
quarterback has to be able to deliver that ball.
Boy, that Nick Mullins, he's a savant. Do you think Nick Mullins is that good, by the way?
No, I actually don't. That's everybody loves a backup quarterback, right? That's just
no question.
That's just the way the NFL works. Everybody's always got a little bit of that wanderlust for the backup quarterback. Oh, could it be? Could that be the one? Could he
grass
be
is always
great?
Greener. Backup quarterback's always better.
Yeah, and I just grass is always greener until Nick Mullins has to play 10 games, and then sure he may play well in some of them. But I mean, we saw last year how many games are you really winning if Nick Mullins is at the quarterback position?
Yeah, it looks starting. To me like perhaps Kyle Shanahan's not sold on Jimmy G as the right quarterback for his system. Looks to me like maybe Jimmy G is aware of that, and it's affecting his play. Something to keep an eye on, as Mike Silver said, something to keep an eye on going forward.
Well, and the only thing that fixes that is continuing to win.
Oh, yeah, if they're winning, then yeah.
But I was just stunned that it came up after. And again, I know Garoppolo didn't play well, but it just... And I'm not – look, I think Mike Silver had spoken with enough people that know what's going on in the 49ers organization to where he had it in his bank of, hey, if Garoppolo doesn't play well, I've got some information to put out there, legitimate information about where things kind of stand there. It just stunned me after a big win and a franchise that I don't – I mean – it's been 4 or 5 years since they had a win as big as the win that they had on Sunday, that ends up being part of the conversation. I'm not blaming Mike Silver. He's doing his job. It's not that's what he's supposed to do, but it cast a little bit of a shadow on, I think, the biggest win in, you could say, 5 years.
Why do you think it is, JD, that the conversation with Garoppolo, the needle on the Garoppolo meter, if you will, always seems to be way too far in the red? Or way down the other way. It's always way, oh, he's the greatest we've ever seen, or this guy's terrible and he's vastly overpaid. It's rarely is it, okay, well, he's a pretty good quarterback and he's the right guy and he's getting better. No, for the most part, it's, wait, Jimmy G's the next great quarterback, or, wow, how did they give him all this money? The guy's terrible.
I think part of it is where he came from, the Patriots. I think part of it is being Tom Brady's backup. I think there's, and playing for Bill Belichick. I think part of it is, it's that Joe Montana to Steve Young. I think there's some 49er aspect of it, too, where
sure. If
Brady is Montana, Garoppolo was essentially set to become the Steve Young, but the 49ers plucked him away. It'd be as if the Patriots had plucked Steve Young away from the 49ers back in the early 90s, let's say, that he's just the next one. In that system, he's going to thrive. Well, but the 49ers, I'm going to say something here that's...
Okay. Hold on.
I've made some Jimmy Garoppolo comparisons.
Yeah?
That have just... People have just been...
Flabbergasted?
Yeah. Just like, what do you do?
Okay.
What if Jimmy Garoppolo's Alex Smith?
Hmm.
Or what if Jimmy Garoppolo needs to be coached to be Alex Smith? And that's his... Because Alex Smith wouldn't throw the pick six with regular. Like, if Jimmy Garoppolo turns into Alex, like, just manage the game is what I'm getting at. Manage the game. It's not specific to. It's just get Jimmy Garoppolo to be.
You're talking
a
about,
better version of Alex Smith.
You're talking about 49er Alex Smith,
yeah.
Not the Chiefs Alex Smith. It was not bad.
Yeah, 49er Alex Smith.
Yeah, then he'd be a disappointment, right? Part of it, too, I think, has to do with where...
Or maybe even in between the 49er Alex Smith and the Chief Alex Smith.
He just has to cut down on the interceptions, and he has to throw for a higher percentage. Whoever that makes him, I don't know, but that's how this offense is going to work. I think the volatility of the conversation on Garoppolo also speaks to the impatience of the fan base, right? Because 49er fans want to see some progress, and maybe that's not entirely fair. Because Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, like, this is year three for us. But for the fans, like, well, it's not year three for us. We had Chip Kelly. We had Tom Sula. Let's go. When are we going to start to see the turnaround?
Well, there is, I don't think, pressure to make the playoffs this season, but I think there's pressure to be in the conversation.
I agree.
I think there's pressure to...
Fairly or unfairly, sure.
December 1st comes around. You need to be in the mix. You need to be, let's see, what would that be? There'd be five games to go. So you'd be play. You need to be 5-6, 6-5.
Yeah.
Or better.
I agree.
At that point. Probably 5-6 at worst. Because if you're 4-7, you're not in it. Right? If you're 4-7, you're not in it. You're 5-6, you're probably, well, if you go 4-1 in the last five, maybe you get in the mix. Not that anyone would believe you're going to go 4-1 in the last five if you're
right
5-6. But you'd at least be in the conversation. Maybe you win 7-8 games and you look back and that is progress over what it's been the last few years.
Yeah. I think the 49ers are going to win tomorrow, primarily for two reasons. We had the Bengals radio analyst Dave Lapham on yesterday. He said the game comes down to two big matchups for Cincinnati. He says it's the Cincinnati offensive line against the 49ers front. And he also said another key for Cincinnati is trying to stop George Kittle. He said that guy is a freakazoid. And I think both those matchups favor the 49ers to the point where I think they should win this game.
And good news on the 49er pass rush front, because it sounds like Nick Bosa is going to be able to go.
Sure.
Back at practice yesterday, ankle sprain continuing to be somewhat of an issue. But, boy, Nick Bosa's got it going pretty well as a guy that's played one NFL game. He's already kind of working.
Pretty cushy, huh?
He's working his way into doesn't have to practice guy until Friday and then still can be up on game day.
He's on the Staley schedule, and it took Staley a long time to get on that schedule.
Yeah, it took Staley probably 7-8 years to get on that schedule. 9, maybe even more. Before he was on the, you know what, Joe, take Wednesday off.
Where do you think the 49er offensive line is? I know that there's been some...
I thought they played pretty well.
I think they're above average offensive line, and I think they do a good job with the zone stretch blocking. But I know there was a Bleacher Report somewhere, an AFC executive anonymously said, that line's going to be a problem for them all year long. They could have done a better job of protecting Jimmy Garoppolo. I think it's a good offensive line, but obviously... how that line continues to come together is going to have a lot to say in terms of how good they end up being.
Did you think the offensive line impeded Garoppolo just to the eye test against Tampa Bay? I didn't.
No, I didn't. How about the receivers? Some people, Garoppolo defenders, will say, well, he doesn't have anyone to throw to.
There were a couple of balls. There was one to Marquise Goodwin that I thought should have been caught, but it was high. But it was both. And I remember, being in Tampa Bay or with the group of beat writers, Cam Inman, who's going to join us at 12:30 among them. And, the question thrown around among everybody that was there was off of that play was, should have been caught or bad throw? And the answer is both.
Mm.
Marquise Goodwin probably, and that's what everybody, that was kind of the consensus, both. Well, yeah, you want your receiver to go up and catch that with nobody around him, and there was nobody around him at that point in time, but it was also an inaccurate throw, so you have to put it down in that column. I thought the offensive line was solid in the game on Sunday against Tampa. You love the tackles, right? Weston Richburg was kind of a disappointment, and then to me it really hinges on the guard play, Laken Tomlinson and Mike Person.
Right.
But I think there will be times where they struggle, but I think it was acceptable.
Yeah, like I said, I think they're an above average offensive line with the potential to be better. How about the rhythm of the passing game? I think sometimes we overlook how it's all coordinated, where when the quarterback's back foot hits, the receivers should be breaking in the routes. It's all supposed to be coordinated. We saw with the Raiders, their passing game, they had great rhythm, right? That helped to neutralize Denver's pass rush Monday night. How about the rhythm of the 49er passing game? Little out of sync,
all
right?
All out of whack.
Yeah.
All out of whack. I thought the best play was the wheel route to Richie James Jr. That, everything worked. Line blocked. It was on time. It was a perfect throw. It was even decently covered by the Bucs, but the play worked to such perfection that it was a touchdown. It was just, boom, touchdown. And so beyond that and a couple of throws to Kittle that were just kind of jammed in there where he made plays because he's a freak, it was really out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
Really out of whack.
Yeah, it was. And I think if you're Kyle Shanahan, that's really an issue going forward.
I'll tell you another thing that I didn't love coming out of the game for the 49ers. They didn't play buttoned up.
No, not at all.
And all the penalties.
Week one, though, right? Week one.
Yeah, it's an extension of the preseason, right? That's where we're at.
Regulars don't play in the preseason, so you're going to see some rust. You're not buying that?
I think to a degree. But I also think this is now year three under Kyle Shanahan, and penalties have been a huge problem the first 2 years. And okay, you have less talent. You're going to have more penalty-prone players, just like you're going to have players that are going to be more prone to drop a pass or fumble a football or be unable to make a throw. If you don't have good players, you know, worse players are going to make more mistakes, and mistakes are penalties, or they're not going to be as good, so you're going to have to hold and things like that. If this is a better quality team, then I think we need to see fewer mistakes.
Speaking of holding, how much water do you think this pro 49er argument holds? Hey, they beat Tampa Bay. We didn't think Tampa Bay was very good. Tampa Bay came back and beat Carolina, so maybe Tampa Bay's better than we thought. So the 49ers' opening victory was actually more impressive than we realized at the time.
I'm constantly playing the schedule game, Whitey. Constantly.
Constantly, again, I know that.
Mentioned it earlier. I run through the algorithm of all 256.
Mm-hmm.
All 256 games just constantly.
I see you jotting it down sometimes.
From the middle of April until they actually play real games.
Yeah.
So I come up with everybody's record, and it just daily it changes, right? You know, little piece of news here, a little piece of news there. So it continues into the regular season. So the 49ers win over Tampa looks better after Thursday night.
Okay, so that does hold some water.
It looks better after Thursday night than it did. No question. Although I think you also have to factor in that Carolina isn't as good. And Cam Newton might be shot.
Yeah. You know what happened to Cam, it looks like? You know, we know that he injured the shoulder.
He's got the yips?
It looks like they removed his whole arm, and they replaced it with Rick Ankiel's arm. And he's trying to throw passes. He's like, I can't get this thing to work,
or
doesn't it?
Jerks and Profar's arm?
Yeah. It's like, oh, my goodness. It looks like a guy's like, my arm's not doing what it's supposed to do. And then in addition, you know, he has the foot injury. There was a 4th-and-1 right before the weather delay where they ran a read option, and he probably should have pitched it, but he didn't. And he didn't look like Cam Newton at all. He had no explosiveness. He made a bad decision, but even with that, he's Cam Newton. He should have been able to, you know, bull his way for a yard, and he looks like he's got Joe Flacco's legs and Rick Ankiel's arm right now, and it's sad to see.
The play that was most indicative, I think, of where they are compared to where they were was the 4th-down play. At the end, where they've pretty much played
a fake Philly,
an awful game.
Special.
They've played an awful game. They still got a chance to win because Tampa's not great, and that would have been the quintessential. The Buccaneers are horrible loss, right? Not play well the first game, second game play better, but they end up losing their 0-2. So I'm thinking, all right, that's what this is going to wind up being, right? And they were a team for years that would just line it up and. Either Cam was getting the yard or one of their running backs was getting the yard, but they were gonna manhandle you. They were gonna run it at
power attack, yeah.
They were gonna run it at you, not around you. And yeah, the fake Philly special pitch to McCaffrey, and I think you get credit for putting the ball in the hands of your best player. McCaffrey's their best player now, which
that play looks like it wasn't blocked especially well.
No. And you're thinking, and McCaffrey gets the ball. And you're thinking, he's not going to get it. Like, immediately, from the moment he caught the ball, you're thinking he's not going to get it, and he didn't. But the Panthers, I mean, there's no way in the years where Cam Newton was an MVP-caliber player and they were a playoff team a couple of years there, there's no way they wouldn't just run it straight up and get the first down, at least.
And there's probably no way that Tampa Bay would have stopped him back then. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So the Buccaneers... win looks a little better. The Panthers.
Jameis made some nice throws.
Looks like they're not as good.
Right.
And the Panthers are a team that's on the 49ers schedule.
Aha.
For later on in the year. So file that one away as we play our continuous schedule game. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Where are you on Jimmy Garoppolo? We'll discuss here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, Whitey Gleason here on a Saturday until 1 o'clock, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. What do you make of Jimmy Garoppolo through week one? And is there too much focus with the 49ers coming off a big win in Tampa? 1-0, they get their season opener for the first time since Chip Kelly was the head coach.
Once Michael Silver... NFL Network says, hey, they could make a move sooner than you'd think if Jimmy G continues to struggle, then it's all fair game. Because that's not just fan speak. That's somebody in the know who apparently has reason to believe that Kyle Shanahan is a big Nick Mullins fan and is not overly pleased with Jimmy Garoppolo's grasp of the offense to this point.
Where do you think that comes from, the big Nick Mullins fan? Because I think the belief out here is, well, see, he's a bigger C.J. Beathard fan than he is even a Nick Mullins fan.
I just, my guess would be it comes from the way Nick Mullins came in and assimilated and learned the system and executed it last year. I know last year they were terrible. They had terrible injuries. They blew four leads in the fourth quarter last year. C.J. Beathard, one of those, and Nick Mullins, three. But that would be my observation, is that Shanahan loved the way Nick Mullins came in and early on had a command of this offense.
I think if you look at the schedule for the NFC West this weekend and the 49ers at Cincinnati, the 49ers have a better shot at being in first place than any other team in the division.
Okay, the Arizona Cardinals' stunning comeback last week resulted in a tie. They got the Ravens, so don't like their chances.
Yeah, they're going to be 0-1-1.
Seahawks against a Steeler team that didn't show up in week one.
And it's the home opener for the Steelers.
Rams got the Saints, but in L.A.
A big revenge game for the Saints.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And the Rams coming off a win. The Rams went and got one at Carolina. So they're, you know, they aren't going to be hurting if they end up being 1-1 after two games. And then the 49ers at Cincinnati, a Bengals team that showed well against Seattle.
Lost. Yeah.
Lost close.
Yeah. You know, last year the Bengals got off to a 4-1 start.
I that totally slipped my mind.
Yeah. And then they lost 7 of their last 8. And see you later, Marvin Lewis. Thanks for everything.
Yeah, Marvin Lewis has been there a while.
Yes, he has. It was time. It was time.
But yeah, the 49ers, I think you could make a case they have the best chance at being 2-0 and leading the NFC West after two games.
What do you think the reaction will be? Let's say they lose. Let's say it's a.
I was going to say, I jumped the gun there. I thought you were going to say, let's say they win. And okay. I was already Super Bowl. So,
sure, yeah,
Super
goes without
Bowl!
Saying. What if they lose a relatively close game where they fail to make a few big plays? They lose this game. What's the reaction going to be?
Quarterback change.
Yeah, it might be, huh?
Left one on the table. Can't get it done. Now, I think 1-1, no matter how you cut it, 1-1's a success for this team after two games. And I think, you know, they spent the entire week in Youngstown and, you know, watching a lot of the press conferences this week online and reading the transcripts. It seems like they hit a little bit of a wall in terms of just being in the 90-degree temperatures, and it's supposed to be as humid and hot in Cincinnati as it was in Tampa, maybe even more so for the game that's going to be an early kickoff, a 1:00 Eastern kickoff compared to the 4:25 Eastern kickoff in Tampa on Sunday.
So you're questioning the wisdom of staying back there?
No, not so much questioning it, but I think there may be more of a physical toll, a lot like basketball or maybe baseball, where you've got a team that's been on a trip for a long time, and maybe the back end of that trip, you run out of gas a little bit. So that's something I would be. And look, I think it's a relatively even game. I mean, the 49ers may be a more talented team top to bottom than the Bengals, but it is the Bengals' home opener. Andy Dalton doesn't stink, contrary to what many people believe.
He actually smelled rather rosy last week.
And there's some question marks surrounding Jimmy Garoppolo, who is the 49ers' most important player, I think, in terms of just how good this team is going to be. So, I mean, I look at it, and I don't think that game's a lock by any stretch. I think it's kind of a coin flip in a similar way to the way the Buccaneers game was a coin flip.
You mentioned that it's the Bengals' home opener, but I think it's an open question as to whether they're going to get the support you'd think a team's going to get in their home opener. I mean, that place could look like a, you know, Giants-Marlins game.
Oh.
Bengal fans, you know, they're not overly excited about this product right now.
Right.
Yeah.
And you don't think any optimism from the...
I don't know.
Oh, shucks, almost loss.
Yesterday, when almost I was won. In for Damon, we talked to Tom Brenneman, who's doing the game for Fox, and he's from Cincinnati, and I asked him about that, and he said, that's a good question. It's going to be interesting to see how excited Bengal fans are right now.
And if they get off to a bad start, maybe they flip it. Maybe they're just gone and...
Right, right.
Or even booing the team.
Yeah, that's a franchise that's been trying to bring those fans back now for a while, a couple years.
Let's get to the phones here. 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Let's start with Scott in Berkeley here on 95.7 The Game. Scott, you were on with J.D. and Whitey.
Morning, fellas. How you doing?
Good.
You know, the thing about Garoppolo, and I was thinking about it, it isn't so much that. It's the lack of a legitimate wide receiver core, and this is kind of the bigger issue with the Niners, really, because for the last four decades, when you start counting it off, from Dwight Clark to Rice to John Taylor to T.O., you've always had a not just a top-level guy, a potential Hall of Fame guy. And, yeah, I think Dwight is a Hall of Fame guy one day. And this is kind of the problem right now. It's hard to make an evaluation about G looking at the wide receiver core. You've got Kittle. That's it. And that's kind of the way I look at it. I think they're fine if they could just find, you know, I guess in the 2020 draft, you know, like a guy 6'2", 210 pounds who runs a 4.2.
Right. You want Julio Jones. You want the next Julio Jones, Scott, to be right there as the lead dog.
Well, certainly when you think of Shanahan's system, what made it work in Atlanta was having Julio Jones.
Do you think Deebo Samuel could be close to that guy?
I guess I don't know. I'm stuck on a name brand guy. I don't know if Deebo is it.
Sure. And you're not
thanks, Scott.
High on Dante Pettis either, I take it. Sounds like Coach Shanahan's not too high on Dante Pettis right now.
Although, expect more than two plays.
Okay.
Expect more than two plays. And Deebo Samuel, I brought it up because I wanted to see Deebo Samuel 5'11", 216. So he's not that
prototypical
body type.
Yeah.
Although it was not surprising to see that he led 49er wide receivers in terms of overall snaps.
So who's the best 49er wide receiver in that period that Scott talked about since T.O.? Would it be Crabtree?
Wow. Probably.
I feel like there's a couple of guys I'm missing, but I think we're talking about the curse of A.J. Jenkins here.
Anquan Boldin was pretty good.
Yes, he was. Thank you.
For a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Torrey Smith was underwhelming during his time. He's a pretty good receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's probably Crabtree, or because the other guy the 49ers had was never great during that Crabtree.
Yeah, you remember the NFC Championship game that they lost to the Giants, the Kyle Williams game, Alex completed two passes to his wideouts or something like that?
Yeah. Chilton Autobody text line, Deebo is Steve Smith Jr.
Ooh.
Yeah, not Steve Smith Sr. Smith Jr.
We don't know yet. We're rushing to judgment here on Deebo.
He's pretty good. He's pretty good, though. I think he's going to be good. I like him.
You can tell from Coach Shanahan's comments that he's not real high on Dante Pettis, right? You can tell from his actions.
Although every time he gets asked about those actions, I like him. He's fine.
Right,
I'm just being tough on him.
Yeah.
He's going to get more two play. At one point Kyle Shanahan said, I didn't even notice it was only two plays.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
That's telling in its own right.
You're right. More to the point. Actions speak louder than words. No matter what he says, you can tell from the amount of time, the amount of snaps that Dante Pettis receives that Kyle Shanahan's not high on it. But I also think you can tell from his actions that he is very high on Deebo Samuel, or at least very hopeful that Deebo can be
played more snaps than any other wide receiver.
Yeah.
And if you watch training camp, as I was fortunate enough to be able to watch a lot of those practices, if it was going to come down to who's going to play more, Deebo Samuel or Dante Pettis, it was an easy call to say Deebo Samuel. And, you know, I think the one, they don't have an outside guy. They do have an inside guy, and it's Trent Taylor. Trent Taylor's a guy that Garoppolo likes to throw the football to. He likes to throw it more inside than outside.
Loves to throw it to Kittle, and who could blame him?
Hey, Kittle will just post up and get it. He'll just yank it right down. I'm just going to jam it in. I mean, there were three or four plays where Garoppolo was just going to, especially after the interception, I'm just going to jam it right into Kittle, and Kittle's either going to catch it for four and maybe add another two, or he's just going to put it on the, he's going to drop it, but nothing bad's going to happen beyond that.
Yeah.
There's an ultimate trust factor there. So it's nice to have a guy like that.
Sure it is.
And Vernon Davis has come up a lot on the Chilton Audubon text line, but Vernon Davis at tight end.
Right, right. Good point, though. Crabtree, he was that guy for Derek Carr for a long time.
Yeah. Very comfortable throwing it to him. So I don't, I think, you know, one of the big questions, I think, coming into the year as far as if you take Jimmy Garoppolo out of it and you want to focus on the receivers, to me it's the players that they have are, they do have complementary skill sets. So it puts the onus a lot, I think, on Kyle Shanahan as the master of this offense to know the right guys to have on the field at the right times. And I think that's a little more tricky than it's a lot like having a three-man platoon in left field, right? It's like, oh, I'm going to play this guy and this guy and this guy. And how are you confident that you're always having the right guy or having the right guy out there?
Too many moving parts.
As frequently as you want.
Yeah.
And I actually think that has the potential to be more problematic than anything.
Yeah. All right. Well, I predict breakout game for Deebo Samuel tomorrow.
And Jalen Hurd's another guy.
Yes. Got to get on the field, though. And Trent Taylor's also got to get back on the field.
And it sounds like those guys are coming back after the bye. Hey, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, by the way. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco. A radio.com sports station. We move now into hour number two.
Aha.
JD and Whitey here on 95.7 The Game. We're with you until 1 o'clock. We're talking a lot of 49ers football, and how can you not? The 49ers.
You already said they're going to go 4-0.
Trying to do something that they haven't done in 30 years.
Since George Seifert was a rookie head coach.
And Joe Montana was a starting quarterback, and that's opened the season with two road wins. They got a great opportunity to do it. One in hand already, and they're taking on a Bengals. Look, it's a winnable game. If you're ranking the games on their schedule coming into the year, this Bengals game is one of the more winnable on paper, although, as we've already noted at a couple of different points, some of the opinions about a lot of these games have started to change, I think, in a favorable way for the 49ers.
Yeah, the 49ers waiting for some of these receivers to have breakout games. The Bengals actually got that last week from John Ross. A.J. Green is out. John Ross, speedster from Washington, right? Last year he was very disappointing. Caught two touchdowns last week. Had a big game. So that's one of the offensive weapons that the 49ers secondary has to be concerned with tomorrow. And I'm going to be very interested to see what we see, how many snaps, and how productive Jason Verrett is tomorrow for the 49ers. Because when healthy, he's a phenomenal playmaker, but he hasn't been healthy much.
No, and I think he was somebody that was probably tabbed coming into training camp. If he had been healthy all the way out, I think he had the potential to be a starter over Akella Witherspoon.
Yes, I agree.
Now, Akella Witherspoon had a nice camp and took an interception to the house and did a nice job against Tampa Bay. So I think that was, among the defense, probably the biggest positive, other than the obvious, which was, hey, the pass rush caused problems for Jameis and forced him off the mark. And they were actually able to catch a couple interceptions, although they dropped a couple. But having Akella Witherspoon look pretty solid and come up with an interception himself, I think that was one of the bigger positives to come out of week one with a defense that showed a lot of positives.
So the defense won the game, right? Would you say the defense won the game for the 49ers?
They won by 14, and the defense scored 14. and the offense spotted them 7.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the 49ers defense scored 14 and gave up 10. It was 14-10 just with that unit on the field. Right there, that tells you a story.
I think they're going to have another big day tomorrow, and I think they're going to have another big pass rush day.
But is Andy Dalton going to be as bad as Jameis Winston? I don't think so.
Probably not. The Red Rifle was firing a lot of bullets on target last weekend.
Andy Dalton's he'll throw the ball away on a couple of those, or take a sack.
Yeah, or lose the ball, strip sack.
Is this going to be a big, Bosa got his first sack, although Jameis...
Didn't he get a sack and a half? I know he got his first sack.
And then Jameis Winston, you know, he gave him the okie doke on a couple.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Is this going to be Bosa, on his way to a 10, 12, 14 sack season, or is he just not going to be able to play enough, you think, to make that happen?
Well, I think it's interesting that they're doing everything they can to get him into these first two games against some weak offensive lines. Yeah, I think he's going to have another big game, and I think he's going to have a big season. Interesting, though, isn't it, when you talk about sacks, and I know I've made this point, I don't mean to be redundant. We talk so much, right, as fans, we talk about sacks, the importance of sacks. Who has the most sacks? Can they get 30 sacks? Last year, the Kansas City Chiefs, they had three guys. It was Jones, Ford, and Houston. Those three guys combined for more than 30 sacks, right? That's phenomenal, right? So how good was their defense? It was so good that the coordinator, Bob Sutton, got fired. So, you know, because they couldn't stop the run.
Right.
So there's a lot more to it, obviously, than just sacking the quarterback.
Yeah. But I think you got to like what you see.
Yeah.
You got to like what you see. And Bosa, I think him playing week one was almost a win. Like, that was just a, just, hey, get out there, even if he was in some pain. Because, look, a lot of the naysayers were coming for Nick Bosa if he had been an inactive player week one. Spent the number two pick on this guy. He's a guy that's supposed to help change your defense along with D Ford. He can't play. So I think he hears the noise. I think the 49ers know that they're in for it if he can't go. But I also think the 49ers are, it's a little bit risky to put him out there again if he's playing on an ankle that is less than 100%, because he could retweak it in a bad way that puts him out a month from any given time.
You know how we've seen teams like the Seahawks and the Rams pay bigger salaries to some of their other non-quarterbacks by having quarterbacks, young quarterbacks, in on rookie deals. So, right?
Yeah.
And economically, it's a great game plan. The 49ers are doing that to a degree with their pass rushers.
Yeah.
Pass rushers are expensive. I know they went out and they got D Ford, but when you draft guys like Buckner and Bosa, you can afford multiple pass rushers who are excellent. Not everybody can afford that in today's NFL.
No, you got to do it one way or the other.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.